Ladies and germs, welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. It's episode 73 for the week of March 12th, 2007. I'm your host, Gregory Alexander Viederman. I'm the editor-in-chief of this here fine PC Gamer magazine, and I'm joined today by our associate editor, Dan Stapleton, who's reporting from inside a fishbowl.
Hello!
Senior executive editor, Chuck Osborne.
Hello, I'm very tired, but I was able to manage to show up to work today.
Why, you?
Yeah, DJ is reporting from inside a fishbowl because he's at home. Inside, apparently, a fishbowl. I'm also joined today by executive editor Kristen Salvatore.
Are we all supposed to be saying our middle names? Did you say your middle name was Alexander? Is that what I just heard?
Yes, it is Alexander.
I see.
Gav.
Nice. You know what's interesting about that is my full name, Gregory Alexander Viederman. Well, no, it sounds... shut up. It sounds totally Russian, doesn't it?
Yes.
But here's the interesting thing.
Well, either that or you sound like serial killer. Because that's right. Also that's bring up.
Serial killers always have
Alexander Viederman.
Yeah. It's definitely a possibility. But no.
If you're a serial killer, your middle name would be Wayne.
Oh my god, what?
What was that? Reporting once again from inside a fishbowl, what was that, Dan?
A serial killer, his middle name is always Wayne.
Oh, right. Anyway, long story short, too late. Gregory Alexander Viederman is always said to sound very Russian. Ironically, I'm dating a Russian girl right now, and they don't have the name Gregory in Russian. It's Grisha. So it's all off.
I'm not sure that's actually ironic. That might be an interesting coincidence.
They don't have, and anybody out there listening who happens to be Russian or know Russian, they can either confirm or dispute this. But I've been told that Gregory is not a Russian name. Grisha is the Russian equivalent.
I thought there was Gregor something like that.
Right.
Gregor. I think that's what they say in vampire movies to make somebody sound Russian.
Maybe that's Romanian.
But anyway, just to circle back real quick, we forgot one important person. We're joined today by the President of the United States, Jeremy Williams.
What's up, everybody?
And a snappy dresser, right.
And a snappy dresser.
I did not vote for him.
Oh, wow.
That's funny. I actually wrote him in.
Really?
Yeah. Because for as little as we pay him, I mean, I figured you could at least, you know, vote for the guy. I mean, you don't want to add insult to injury.
You guys have never written in your vote for the presidential election? That's how, like, Mickey Mouse gets, you know... 2% of the
notice how Mickey Mouse
always different. Gets.
I like my vote to actually. Well, I like to pretend that it counts.
Yeah. Well, moving on from my middle name and politics, I suppose we can talk about GDC, which we were just at. It was just last week in San Francisco.
But what does GDC stand for, Greg?
It's Game Developers Conference, Chuck. I'm glad you.
Oh,
asked.
Great! Thanks.
Yeah, it's typically held in San Jose, California, but this year it was in San Francisco, the busiest one in. Many years.
Apparently, it will be in San Francisco now for the next 4 years as well. It's not going back to San Jose.
Thank God. But yeah, it's because of, once upon a time, GDC or E3 was canceled. There's now sort of two E3s.
There's more E3s than you know to do it.
Yeah, but this GDC was very large as a result of that mix-up. So it was a good time. There was a lot of information. You know, a lot of people are talking, of course, about the Sony announcement of Home for the PS3, which is sort of like Second Life for your PlayStation 3, which is, I guess, kind of interesting.
It's boring.
Do we know how much that's going to cost?
It's free.
Supposedly it's free.
It's free.
Yeah, but it is advertising supported. So, you know, when you're setting up your home and wandering around, you get to see lots of ads.
And there'll be microtransactions. You can buy furniture and stuff.
Of course.
I was just
awesome.
Going to say, so it's really just like Second Life.
Except Second Life is pretty much free, though, right?
Well, unless you want to own property.
Right.
Or hire a prostitute.
Right, but that's between you and the prostitute.
Yeah,
that has nothing to do with Second Life.
That's
right.
Oh, we're dipping into porn again.
Did you see the Sony keynote or just hear about it?
Just heard about it. Did anybody hear? Did you guys see it?
No, because it was PS3. I was just doing PC stuff.
Yeah, there was plenty of PC stuff there.
I think it's kind of neat. I mean, it's all physics-based, so you can actually play games in there. Like, you can play bowling.
Bounce a ball around.
You can play basketball or do bowling inside of Home with your friends, and that looks kind of fun.
I want to go out and buy a $700 console so that I can play with a ball.
Play Second Life.
That's the thing that's sort of strange about it to me, is it seems like for something that's on such an, exactly what DJ just said, that's on such an expensive piece of hardware, I just don't completely get. It seems too casual a thing for people who have gone and dropped all that money on the PS3.
Well, one thing that I was hearing a lot of at GDC this year is that, and I know Warren Spector mentioned this in his session about narrative, was that he was strongly believing that one of the future options for gameplay is really going to be hinging on social gameplay. So, you know, it's all going to be about, you know, what you can do with other people. And so I think that's probably what, you know, Sony's thinking there.
Hey, Chuck, what does Warren Spector look like?
What does he look like?
He looks like a father.
He's a dashing fellow. He has a beard.
Does he have long hair?
No.
Okay.
Wears glasses. He looks like your best friend's friendly dad.
Okay.
That's
just curious.
Always smiling, that guy, though.
Always smiling.
Yeah, very nice.
But just to go back to what you were saying, Chuck, like, I agree. I think that's the future also. I just don't want to have to interface with that to get to, say, Gears of War. Like, there's a time and a place.
Well, you wouldn't have to.
That's what I'm not
PS3.
Understanding. Yeah. Right.
Home is a separate thing. You jump into it when you want to go to home. You can play your games just straight from the menu.
Okay. That's exactly what I was hoping it would be, because I just don't think people should be forced to do that. And I actually think, I'll get proven wrong here, I'm sure, but I think fewer people than Sony thinks will actually be interested in doing much with that, other than the novelty at first. My guess is it will wear off. But we'll see. Time will tell. There were certainly other bigger announcements as far as we were concerned.
Well, I'm just wondering, like, how quickly, like in Second Life, how quickly some of the seedier aspects will enter into home. You know, it's like, how much is Sony going to have to keep an iron grip on that community to make sure that there is no gambling and prostitution and, you know, whatnot going on in there?
Well, it's nowhere near as flexible as Second Life. I mean, they're not going to let you write your own stuff for it. They're just going to let you play with the toys they give you.
But you can do all sorts of gross things with toys you're given.
That's true.
Moving right along.
See how I did that? I got to end the conversation. We can move on to PC game-related stuff. There was a lot of cool stuff. I actually met with a company, a Korean company, and I'd be interested to hear from the listeners if they actually are aware of the name of this company and the name of their biggest game, Nexon. They are Korean MMO developers, and their biggest game out right now is MapleStory, which is sort of like it's used a lot by 16 and 17 year olds as a social network. It's kind of got like the kiddie super deformed graphics. It's sprite based, so it runs on a lot of machines. It's free. These are the guys that invented the microtransaction paradigm, really. I mean, this, so you know, they give the game away, and then if you want to maybe upgrade your weapons or upgrade your armor quicker than you would in the game, you can buy special items, you know, one at a time. But the amazing thing about this is that they are 50 million players strong worldwide.
They claim.
I'm pretty sure they can back that up, because they've got Coca-Cola advertising, and they've just partnered with MTV worldwide, apparently, based on the conversation that we had at the show. I don't think it's just spots. I think it's going to be part of their, they're going to actually like discuss it maybe on some of their video game programming that they have. I haven't watched MTV in a while, but they're going to be discussing this game on MTV across all their networks around the world. They claim to have 3 million registered users in the U.S. alone, and that's with basically zero marketing.
What is the game called again? I'm going to look it up.
It's called MapleStory. The average age is between 16 and 17. It's sort of like the, according to the developers, it's become something of like, it is an MMO, and you do go and you do typical things, I guess, you know, you level up and you fight monsters, but it's also, I guess, it's being used by teenagers as a social network.
It looks like a side-scroller.
So basically, there are more people in the United States playing MapleStory than there are playing WoW.
Yes. But you don't have to pay to play MapleStory.
Something's wrong.
Here's why I don't buy this. I just looked this up on Wikipedia.
Yes.
The population of South Korea, 49 million.
Yeah, pretty much everybody is playing MapleStory.
Yeah, all the time. Like the entire population.
It's not just that. Now here's the thing. So here's to qualify the statement. It is free to play. So just because, you know, I think once upon a time, maybe a year ago, the game's been out for a while, a year or two ago, I installed it and I registered a copy. So, like, they count me in that 50 million, right? So, but I'm obviously not playing it. That said, you know, you do have to, it's not just you download the game and start playing it. You do have to download it. You do have to add registration info. So, I mean, the people are definitely, there's definitely a large number of people playing it. Is it 50 million? Obviously not. But it's big enough, like I said, I'm sure they had to prove to Coca-Cola that they were big, you know, that they were, you know, serious, that they meant serious business here. Apparently they're a major force in Korea. They're going to be doing some more. They're having some new games. We're going to talk about some of the new games in an upcoming issue of the magazine.
Their website doesn't even support Firefox.
Yeah. Again, they're doing this on, like, it was basically a shoestring budget. They did no marketing, no sales, or, you know, they didn't go out, no targeted sales in the U.S. at all. And they did manage to get 3 million registered users in the U.S. just based on word of mouth. And again, I guess primarily it's being used as a social network, but their other games that they're going to be launching soon are actually more, you know, based on, you know, like actually playing a game as opposed to a social network.
Basically, high schools and junior high schools must be abuzz with news of MapleStory. Like that's what all the kids are playing.
Assuming what the numbers that they state are accurate, that must be the case. I mean, imagine like something like a MySpace that nobody knows about, like the best kept secret. He says,
Dan, you sound skeptical.
Within his fishbowl, yeah. Dan is skeptical about everything, which is healthy. Yeah. Which is healthy. Yes, this was just based on one meeting. Gonna follow up, gonna have some more conversations about the product. But just, I just thought it was fascinating that they've gotten that many. Let's say that, you know, it's like sort of like Second Life. You know, Second Life is always, what is the number they kick around, however many million people are actually, you know, they claim as registered users. It's the same thing. It's like anybody can register an account. It doesn't cost anything.
On a free service.
And the numbers that Blizzard releases are all active played accounts.
That's what they say, although there are different publishers actually dispute those numbers. And and as Chuck pointed out, in the U.S., like, you know, WoW is arguably larger in Asia than it is. I think it is larger in Asia than it is here. There's I think, 3 million, 3.5 million people playing WoW in the U.S., maybe even less than that. So when you think about it in terms like that, people are always talking about, you know, how, remember, if you guys remember, like, EverQuest, like, For years, EverQuest was at like 450,000 players, and nobody was going to be able to break that number. That was just U.S. So that was 450,000 in the U.S. WoW, even today, is about, like I said, maybe around 3 million. So it's not that
much. But at the same time, you remember Lineage in South Korea. they were boasting like 7 million, 10 million, and that was while EverQuest was at that, you know, 450,000 number.
That's true.
In fact, I don't know how South Korea has an economy. Because apparently everyone there is playing massively multiplayer games or RTSs.
Yeah, they play a lot of games there. There is zero stigma surrounding video games. So, you know,
that's awesome.
Yeah, there's no, like, it's just completely it's completely accepted. It's like, I guess, the equivalent of watching TV there. I mean, nobody, you know, a lot of girls play games. Guys aren't looked down upon as dorks or geeks for playing them. It's just part of society there.
Shangri-La.
Wow.
Yeah.
I want to meet a girl.
Yeah.
Oh, hi, Kristen.
Me
How are
too.
You? What are you doing over there?
I'm going to meet a girl too.
One of the other interesting stories that came out of GDC was, you know, the piracy debate sort of got, on the PC side, sort of got started again. And apparently the Epic guys were one of the groups to lead that charge.
In which direction?
Pro-piracy, Dan.
Yeah, they are anti-piracy. They're saying that it killed them. And I think it's not just piracy. Chuck, you brought this up earlier.
Yeah, it was actually part of a session about, continuing to make... the future of PC in a world where consoles are online.
Right.
And so what he was talking about was that, you know, it personally killed him, and I forgot the name of the gentleman, I'm sorry about that, but it personally killed him to have to bring Unreal Tournament 3 out on the consoles, but they really didn't have any choice because that was the only way they could recoup their costs, you know, because that's where the money is right now.
I think that's changing. A lot of the buzz at the show, at GDC this year was about how, first of all, how many awesome games are slated for the PC this year, and also how Sony's missteps with the PlayStation 3 leave wide open, you know, a ton of opportunities for developers to just sort of make, you know, cross-platform games for Xbox 360 and PC, especially with Live, which is now called, you know, it's gone from Live Anywhere to Games for Windows Live.
I just wanted to add that also Todd Hollinshead, the CEO of id, was saying that while they still consider themselves primarily a PC developer, they have to look at consoles because they have a much lower piracy rate.
Right.
I guess mod chips are just a little bit harder.
They're a little bit harder, and it's a different crowd. I certainly have known people on the older generation consoles that pirated, but I guess it was much less of a problem.
I had a not dissimilar conversation with Mark Rain, actually, from Epic, about, you know, the number of games they're putting out on consoles, and he said,
right,
similar to, I think, what Chuck, it sounds like you were talking to somebody else from there.
I talked to actually several different developers, and they were saying that, yeah, it's going to be PC and 360, and
yeah,
one of them said, well, we're looking at the PS3. You know, it's not a definite. And, of course, the Wii is its own animal. So.
Right. But I think the feeling is pretty much like, hey, if we can, you know, create the game for more people and make more money, why not, you know?
On the piracy end of it, I was just noting on the blog last week that THQ and their last couple RTS games, like Company of Heroes and Supreme Commander, they have dropped the disc check.
Yep.
So you can play the game without the disc in the drive, which I personally love.
Apparently they shipped Supreme Commander with the disc check, but then they released a patch that disabled it.
Yeah, I think there were some technical issues with the disc check, like when you launch a game out of GPGNet, their multiplayer service, sometimes it would stall. So if you and I set up a multiplayer match, and you had that problem, I would think that you dropped out, or like you, for some reason the connection wasn't working.
Right.
Then, you know, a couple minutes later, yours would come in, after your disc check finished, yours would come up and I would be gone. So.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, the thing is,
I think that's why they dropped it.
And I think long term, well, not long term, I mean, it's relatively a short term problem. I think that hopefully within the next couple of years, you know, as companies move more towards Steam-like services, you know, even for single-player games that are on disk, as a way to you know, do the security check, I think, you know, piracy will become less of an issue.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, if a game resides entirely on somebody else's server, like in the case of WoW, you know, you're not going to see a lot of piracy. Obviously, that requires a whole set of, you know, infrastructure changes and things like that. But I think that's probably the way we're headed. Plus, I think, you know, I'm sort of just to beat a dead horse. I mean, we talk about a lot about the Games for Windows initiative and what Microsoft is doing to drive PC gaming in 2007 and beyond. But I think that's going to help a lot. I'm hoping, you know, the Vista security measures, you know, go a long way towards stemming the tide.
There's always a way, though. The WoW guys, you can play on pirated servers where there's just nobody on them.
Yeah,
and
it
kind of defeats the point. Same thing with Steam. There's a way to, I think you can sort of set up a fake Steam server that your
Absolutely.
Half-Life would log into.
Oh, there are ways around everything. It's a matter of you know, how many hoops you're going
you're
right.
to
make somebody jump through.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of why the disc check thing always bothered me, or has bothered me for years, because the amount of effort it takes somebody to get around a disc check is so small. Mm-hmm. You know, it all does is punish people who legitimately paid for it and actually are swapping that disc out.
Yeah.
Half-Life, the collector's edition, actually shipped with the disc check in it, despite the fact that it had to log into Steam every time you started up the game.
So yeah, the double whammy.
Yeah, they actually released a patch that got rid of that disc check, thank God.
Well, it's kind of, you can't really blame them. I mean, considering that their game was on shelves in Europe and Asia like a year before they actually launched it, like they were going to be a little nervous.
That's right.
You
yeah,
know?
That's true.
You know, they were going to bend over backwards. I'm surprised that the damn thing didn't have Star Force. Interestingly enough, you know, as positive as we've been on Games for Windows, Valve was quoted at GDC. Valve's Doug Lombardi, who it's funny because I actually spoke to him. Chuck and I spoke with him at the show a little bit about this, but he didn't actually give his opinion at the time on Games for Windows I was excited about it, and he sort of kept quiet. But they've come out. He's come out saying that he's not so sure that it's that Microsoft is serious. He says, let's see, what did he say here? He was interviewed on GamesIndustry.biz saying, right now it seems like Games for Windows is part of the marketing push to help Vista, adding to really back a platform. It's a sustained effort over years and years, so we'll see if in 2 years Microsoft is still spending money to put Games for Windows sections in retail and having PR people reach that message, preach that message that the PC isn't dying.
Yeah, I was talking to Shane Kim at GDC about that, and actually I think we should try and cut that bit together into a little interview that we can put on the podcast in the second episode this week.
Who's Shane Kim?
He's the what is his exact title?
He's
forget.
Vice President of Microsoft Game Studios, if I recall.
Yeah, he's up there.
The thing is, that would be interesting to get him interviewed. I mean, the problem that that Microsoft has is you know I see it as I mean, they've got a number of problems. First of all, I still believe them. I do think they're going to do this. I think it's harder than they thought, so it's going to take a little bit of time. That said, some mistakes have clearly already been made. I mean, Bill Gates was quoted at CES as saying that the PC is their number one gaming platform ahead of Xbox 360, and then they launched Vista without a single game ready. That's really kind of inexcusable. I mean, where's Shadowrun? Where's Gears of War PC? Where's Halo 2 even? Just something that requires Vista.
Dude,
for what it's worth, right. And I can't attach a name to it. It's just an unnamed source, but unnamed sources within Microsoft have certainly said things to me about how unhappy they are about that.
I just read on the Flight Sim 10 blog that the DirectX 10 patch won't even be out until this holiday.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a little bit. I mean, I feel it's hard to. I mean, I can certainly see why people are skeptical because it's hard to buy what they're saying when, for example, when about like 8 or 9 months out from the Gears of War launch on Xbox 360, Bill Gates showed up at Epic and said, "You guys have to get this done in time for Christmas. No ifs, ands, or buts." And basically, you know, Epic ended up moving people from other projects. They moved mountains to make sure that happened.
I wonder if it's that they're putting more of their efforts into making sure that these games are ready to launch with Games for Windows Live. That maybe that's more important to them than
Vista in terms of
pushing the platform.
But that should have been ready when Vista launched.
Okay, well, that may be true. I'm just saying that, like, I suspect that if that couldn't be the case, which obviously it couldn't, that rather than putting all of their efforts behind having Vista, you know, having games when Vista launched, they want to have games to, you know.
I think they may also be having some difficulty in actually convincing developers, because I've heard more than one developer at GDC say that, you know, they hadn't drunk the Kool-Aid, as they put it.
And
we're, you know, very skeptical about Microsoft's motives, and then also, you know, not wanting to have to expend the extra effort in order to make their games Games for Live compatible.
And you know, now that the pricing scheme has been announced for Games for Live, which doesn't
it has?
Yeah,
Games for Windows Live.
Yeah, it has been.
Really?
Hang on one second.
What is it?
Hang on one second. It's exactly the same as
Xbox.
It's exactly the same, yeah. So there's a free silver package, and then the gold package is $7.99 a month, $19.99 for 3 months, or $50 for the year. But don't forget, if you already, you know, it's the same. So it's the same account. So if you already have Xbox Live Gold, then you're all set, right?
Now, what about playing multiplayer PC versus PC?
You're going to be allowed to do that
on silver.
On silver,
Kristen, I missed that. So if you have gold on Xbox, it covers PC as well.
It's the same gamer tag, same account for both.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So you're all... Well, it's nice if you have a 360.
that's true, but a lot of people do. I think so. That'll be a lot of people who just jump straight in and they already have a gold account.
Yeah, I mean, and you'll actually be... I mean, that's part of I, as a 360 owner already, what I thought was so cool about it is, you know, like I said, you have your same gamer tag, you're racking up achievement points for your account on both on both platforms, but, you know, not everybody has a 360, And you know, it's interesting. We had sort of a conversation here last week, and Greg and DJ, you can recount that in the fishbowl about our different reactions to how we felt about the fact that they were going to attach pricing to it at all.
I actually wrote my ed note about it, so it's great. Like, we just shipped that issue, and meanwhile, now the story is old. So you can read a slightly older opinion of the pay or not pay situation for gold on Windows. But in a nutshell, or I'm sorry, in a fishbowl, the conversation we were having, DJ and I, was there was a rumor, there was a screenshot that went out about a week ago on the internet, and it was for Shadowrun, and there was some fine text at the bottom that basically said, in order for PC players to be able to play against 360 players, both people had to have live gold accounts.
That's not a rumor. That's true. That's been confirmed.
All right. Well, that part, well, obviously, it's all been confirmed now. But at the time, that screenshot went out, there wasn't a lot of clarity about what exactly live on Windows would be, about games for Windows Live. Like, would it be free? Would there be a charge? There was speculation that there would be a charge. So Dan's initial reaction to seeing that there would be a gold, the implication being that they would be charging for games for Windows Live, was, I think the direct quote was, if Microsoft charges PC gamers for Live, it's the equivalent of taking a high-powered rifle and shooting their foot off.
I think it is shooting themselves in the foot with a high-caliber weapon was my exact quote. And, you know, as a non-360 owner,
right,
my incentive to buy into it is very, very small. I mean, I want to play against 360 players just to, you know, beat them
crush
badly.
Them.
Yeah.
To hear the lamentations.
But I'm really surprised by how few games are so far, you know, planning on offering cross-platform competition. You know, that, yeah. There's Shadowrun and maybe a couple of
others.
Does
that really surprise you, though? Because we've always thought that would be hell.
I've been asking developers that have been planning on bringing out the same product for both PC and Xbox 360, are you going to allow competition between the consoles? And even for those games that are still in the development stage, a lot of these guys are saying, well, no, not for this one.
I don't know, the majority of them that I've talked to have said we just haven't said, or we're not talking about that yet. Yeah, so it sounds like an option that's available to them, and, like, you know, they may just not have finalized agreements yet. So
I'm actually going to throw out another, I can't tell you who said this, but one of the developers I spoke with said some of the reason that that's still on the bubble is that apparently there's some question about exactly what stuff you'll get with silver and what stuff you'll get with gold, including possibly voice chat stuff. So I think that may be one of the reasons people are waiting too. It's not completely settled yet what you get from silver and what you get for gold. The technology is not actually completely nailed down yet.
So it's hard. It's sort of like people are wanting, like, there's plenty of people that say they plan to support DirectX 10, and they were even saying that last year. But the video cards didn't come out until the end of 2006.
Again, going back to your point, Greg, that sounds like stuff that should have been nailed down like 6 months ago at least. You know,
it absolutely should have been nailed down. There are a lot of reasons why it wasn't. I think it's inexcusable that the stuff wasn't nailed down. The stuff should have come out with launch. There should have been at least a single game, a single title that launched with, like, their Microsoft.
I'm sorry, who's that, Greg? It's Microsoft on the telephone calling to say thank you for your support.
Well, no, I'm sorry. When you come out and say that this is our number one gaming platform, we consider this our number one gaming platform, and you launch without a single f***ing game, and yes, you can do that. It's inexcusable. It's like the Xbox 360 launching without a single game. That said, I believe they will get the situation sorted. So,
but by
I'm
when?
Sort of,
my frustration is that it's been almost 2 months and we still don't have a DirectX 10 game.
That's true.
Well, it'll be longer than that.
Right.
It's going to be, but you also have to keep in mind, realistically, the percentage of people that are capable of playing a DirectX 10 game right now is very small. So publishers aren't incentivized. You know, I mean, there's just not a push for it right now. It will happen. It's going to happen in 07.
I'd also like to be able to walk into a software store that's supposed to have these big games for Windows kiosks and not see huge Zune ads instead, you know. It's like, okay, that's what they're really trying to sell is the Zune.
You had
and not games for Windows.
You had a picture of that big kiosk in your magazine some months ago with a picture of Gears of War PC on it.
We have yet to see that kiosk in an actual store.
For me, I mean, as somebody who you know, got on the Vista bandwagon early, I mean, it's not that big a change that I feel like they put out a whole new platform that I really kind of miss there being a new game like that takes advantage of it at launch. And from what I hear technologically, the DX10 stuff just wasn't nailed down in time. I mean, talking to some developers who are working on DX10 patches for their games, like they had to start pretty much at around the time Vista came out.
Wow.
So,
But I mean, just the entire way that it was handled. I mean, I sort of do feel like a second-class gamer in a sense, because, you know, so many of the drivers weren't even finished by the time that the product came out. I mean, you know, we had to have beta drivers for old creative cards just to get those cards to work.
Same way with XP. You know, it wasn't ideal by any means, but I don't think this was a terrible launch for them.
I'm not saying it's a terrible launch. I'm just saying that if Microsoft is going to claim that the PC is its primary gaming platform, and then to not launch a single game with it, is a misstep. It's a pretty critical misstep, and people have a right to be surprised by what they've done.
And there was a suggestion on our forum a little while ago where somebody said, you know, they sort of packaged Halo 2 as like the minesweeper of Vista.
That was mine.
Was that you?
Yeah.
Oh.
Good work.
Yeah.
Jeremy, you just had you quoted back to you.
That would have been awesome. So, or you know, if they just did it with Halo 1, you know, just to have a real, you know, full-fledged game in there, better than Minesweeper, that would have been a hint that, you know, they're serious about games.
Yeah, just to be clear, I'm not at all disagreeing that this didn't go as well as certainly we would have hoped, and I'm going to guess they would have hoped, assuming they care. I'm just saying I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater yet, you know?
Well, I don't think anyone's suggesting that, you know, you throw out Windows Vista and install Linux instead, you know, or go with a Mac.
And I'll take it one further by saying, I'll repeat, I actually think this is going to be a success. I think Microsoft will make this happen. I just think that it's a rocky start. Like, it's, you know, it's possible that Sony will pull out the PlayStation 3, but nobody could dispute that its launch has been lackluster. So it's sort of the same thing. It's like, I just wish for such an important thing, you know, obviously PC gaming is hugely important to me, and for such a large initiative, it certainly would have been great if there was just a game at launch that really showcased DirectX 10 or Live or, you know, something that was, it's like the story that we did. We did Windows Vista and the Future of PC Gaming story at the end of 2006, and it was actually less about the operating system, because like you said, Dan, it's just kind of a, you know, it's a new operating system. It's not by itself, it's not that big of a deal. What's really exciting about it are the initiatives that surround it, and some of the software that's built into it. But there's nothing out right now that really showcases all that stuff and makes it really necessary. There's no app that's making people go out and buy Vista now.
So what do you think they could do now that would make, I mean, like, is there anything they could do right now that would make you feel like, okay, it's back on track? Or is the damage?
Oh no, I think it's gonna get back on track pretty quickly. I think what's gonna happen is Live will launch with Shadowrun. Mm-hmm. Right now, probably very few of you out there listening are excited about Shadowrun. But the thing is, we all just played it here at PC Gamer, and we were kind of interested in it before, but you know, it just kind of seemed like a B-level game, to be perfectly honest, just looking at it from the sidelines. We just played it a week or two ago.
It's pretty fun, huh?
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun.
It's maybe the best time we've had playing a multiplayer game since Quake 3, certainly since Prey, as a team. It's phenomenal. So you might not be excited about it now, but I think Shadowrun's going to launch. People are going to see that they can play against Xbox gamers.
And embarrass them.
Not so much, I don't think.
Not as much as, you know, you might think.
Not as much, but still embarrassing.
They've got the balancing down. I think you'll be surprised. I think it'll be a pleasing experience for 360 owners. It'll also be a pleasing experience, an even more pleasing experience, I'd say, on the PC. I think as soon as that launches, I think the impression that people have of the Vista launch being lackluster will start to change.
And what's that launch date?
I don't know if they haven't said it yet. Officially said, it's really closely tied to Live. So my understanding is that when Games for Windows Live is ready, they will launch that game and it will launch with it.
There was this story that broke while we were all at GDC. We came home at night and looked online and were like, holy crap, what is this? There was a rumor that started on the GameSpot forums that the one 50% score that Supreme Commander had gotten had been bought and paid for by a competitor, which this was in a GamePro Australia. They claimed they just couldn't get it working and they didn't like it and yada, yada, yada. It was far and away the lowest score the game got. Somebody started a rumor that EA had bribed GamePro to come out with this this low score in advance of Command & Conquer 3 coming out. Which
everything about it is so funny.
Yeah, the fact that so many people believed it, because, I mean, first of all, in the years I've worked here, nobody's ever offered me a cash bribe, which is kind of insulting. Come on.
not a cash bribe.
No, disappointingly, no.
Hasn't anyone wanted to send a hooker into your fishbowl?
There's only room for one person in this fishbowl.
Yeah, it's patently ridiculous. I mean, the fact that that it would happen in the first place anywhere, but then if it was going to happen, that it would be the Australian GamePro.
It's pretty random.
The most influential.
Yeah, because nobody makes a buying decision without checking Australian GamePro first.
I know,
crazy.
I don't.
Yeah. So it's it was outlandish, and the unfortunate thing is that once the claim is made, it resonates with people. Like, I don't know why it is, but as long as I've been here at the magazine, 8 years running. Like, people want to believe that we're on the take. People want to believe, I don't know, maybe because they think the job's too cool. I don't know what the angle is. Like, it's too cool and we don't deserve the jobs, or maybe they think they'd be on the take if they were us, but there's just, it's a completely baseless claim.
So
how was the rumor
debunked, and was it ever traced back to the source?
The guy who posted it on the GameSpot forums came back and said, I totally made that up.
So don't believe what you read in forums.
But of course, the skeptical people listening on the podcast right now will go, but he was paid to say that.
I just think it's really interesting. Like, I know all of us have, and this used to happen when I worked at Maximum PC too. Like, people take these reviews very, very seriously and really take them to heart. And if there's some product or game that they really like that they feel we've somehow maligned, people have gotten extremely upset.
Yeah.
You know, there's been stories of, like, threats and craziness.
And I guess ever since my Quake 4 review score, which was a 70%, a good score, you know, I'm like, probably the biggest Quake 3 fan on the staff, except maybe Jeremy, and we are still labeled as being Quake haters. In fact,
right,
because of that little mix-up in our April issue in which Quake Wars did not appear,
yeah,
you can find the full preview on our website. Go to www.pcgamer.com. It's there. But a lot of people, you know, were saying, ah, this proves they're anti-Quake bias. They hate Quake.
Yeah, there's no... And remember, Chuck, also, there was that big... it was a private brouhaha, and I won't name names, but... In the last couple of years, I guess there were a couple adventure game scores that a certain website out there, a certain owner of a certain website didn't like, and so basically accused me that basically since I took over, I guess it must have been in the last year. So yeah, after
yes,
I took over, I was telling Chuck and Logan, the two biggest adventure game fans on the magazine, to under no circumstances give an adventure game an Ed Choice Award. You know, under my iron rule, I there was no way, like, you couldn't. It was a proclamation that here on out, no adventure game would ever get a 90%. And
yes,
he actually said that in an email to Chuck, which Chuck read to me, and we both laughed.
Greg whipped me after combining a bottle with a rope,
yeah,
and then taping it together.
Now,
back
to this. Back to this rumor. I had heard, yeah, connected to it, that GamePro was now closing its doors because they were outed. So was that completely falsified as well?
I think that was
completely false.
As well.
Okay.
Not a shred of truth to any of it.
Patently untrue.
But it's enough to have. And the thing is like, how many people heard that story and then didn't see the follow up where it was debunked? Probably a significant number. So a lot of people out there probably still believe this ridiculous claim was true.
Well, it sounds like the real problem is this guy doesn't know a good RTS when he sees one.
Yeah.
He's
yeah. This guy was, you know, certainly wrong, but I don't think he's on the take.
Right.
Hey, PC Gamer. This is Jake from Berkeley, California, with a question about Blizzard, mainly World of Warcraft. Was wondering, how do you think Blizzard has affected the gaming community dealing with gamers' expectations what a game should be nowadays.
I'm not quite sure I totally get what he's going
for. It's an interesting question. I think one thing that Blizzard has always done really well is deliver quality. And what I mean by that is that, you know, you get the product out of the box, you install it, and you know that you're going to have a really good experience. All of their products are very well polished. So if that's one thing, I think maybe Blizzard may be helping to teach players, you know, not to expect a lot of bugs. You know, that you're going to have a very good game experience right out of the box.
But on the other hand, WoW did have its issues when it first came out. It had some server problems and stuff like that, just because they weren't expecting the massive demand.
Well, that was at the very launch, but I'm talking about like all the people that have joined in the months and years since.
Right, and Blizzard has a long history of postponing games until they're very satisfied that it's going to be just right. And they have meticulously good art design, like going all the way back to Warcraft 2. Their art has been just above and beyond what's expected at that time. So
yeah, their cinematics are always fantastic.
Right.
But I think I would say that what they've done as far as training the game community is just to expect quality from Blizzard. I don't think that their games train them to think that they're going to get that level of experience from anybody else.
Well, but say you have somebody who they got into WoW, it's their first game. They got into WoW because their other friends are playing it, and so maybe they are expecting that other games, other PC games, are going to have that same commitment to perfection that Blizzard's games do.
Right. That's unfortunate.
I've been wondering lately what Blizzard's going to do next. We don't even quite know what their profits are, and by any stretch, because they're totally private about that, but they must have more resources in their hands now than anyone else. I mean, they probably could do something with a game beyond anything that we've ever seen, something that EA couldn't even pull off if they wanted to.
We're pretty sure it's going to be mini golf.
Hey guys, this is Andrew. Hope that this won't take too long, but it's a very interesting series, namely the Battlefield series, and that's what you were talking about last week, or the week before, or whenever, and I feel that if Battlefield is truly to succeed, they should introduce destructible environments. Battlefield 2 is supposed to have them, but I think they should really incorporate them. Battlefield Bad Company already has them. I also think for the next Battlefield series, they should incorporate a new element of customization, especially if they redo Battlefield Vietnam, per se. Like in Vietnam, you're able to choose how many weapons pods you're able to mount on your Phantom, or how many rocket pods on your Huey. And of course, there are different compromises and balances to this, of course. But, just saying, you should be able to have a choice in everything you do, especially with the United States side, because they did quite a bit of picking and choosing throughout the Vietnam War. I think they should also redo the modern combat era. I really like how it's, modern combat, where you're fighting against hypothetical enemies such as the Middle Eastern Coalition and the Chinese Army, but they're not so hypothetical, but whatever. I really think that if you were to develop this, DICE should have, be able to give us more vehicles to fly, like let us fly the Hueys. The Hueys are still being flown today by the Marines. In fact, the UH-1Y is coming out in a couple months, I think, to be operational. The Super Cobra, they already had that, but there's actually a new Super Cobra that's coming in. It's quite different than how you're flying it in Battlefield. They should also have the Super Hornet as another one.
There's another minute of this.
It would have been nice if that didn't take so long, but it's nice that he hoped that it wouldn't take long.
But I got to agree. I mean, a lot of the stuff he's saying, I actually agree with. And I actually, to his first point about destructible environments, the game that made me want that more than any in a first-person shooter, interestingly enough, was Company of Heroes, an RTS. Because that, for some reason, when I'm playing Company of Heroes, it feels like I'm playing a top-down shooter. I don't know, maybe I'm the only one, but there's like a level of interactivity there, and certainly with the quality of the graphics, it makes me feel that way. And in Company of Heroes, you can break down walls, you can, drive into buildings, and that somehow, strangely enough, made me really crave that in my shooters. So yeah, being able to have destructible environments going forward, and I think it's just a matter of time before we start seeing this in just about every shooter, but I think it's a big thing going forward.
Actually, I did see one at a GDC this year. The name of it is called Warmonger. It's going to be coming from NetDevil. And it's actually going to be taking advantage of the of a GeoPhysX card, which I know most of us do not own. But I'm hoping that future games will be able to use, you know, multi-core threading.
Yes.
To actually, you know, make that happen in other games.
But
Warmonger is actually a very interesting looking game because you can actually blow up just about everything in the environment, or at least dent it.
I've always been, you know, going all the way back to XCOM, destructible environments are, like, my favorite thing ever. The more stuff I can break, the better. And, you know, the thing that blew me away the most at VDC for in terms of destructible environments was the new video that came out for Crysis.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
They have this, I guess it's a tech demo for the Crytek 2 engine, is what it is. You know, they're
trying to sell it.
They're trying to sell that to other developers to, and I guess they already licensed it to one developer I'd never heard of. But in this demo, there's an explosion, like a nuclear explosion in the background. And then you see a shockwave coming towards you, and there's a barn in front of you. And it just splinters into a million pieces and flies straight at you, you know, realistically. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen, you know, in terms of destructible environments.
That is pretty cool looking. I also finally saw that tech that Kristen was talking about months ago from LucasArts.
Are you talking about the new Star Wars game?
Yeah, no, it's the technology that allows the characters to move and sway and basically animate without having any prefabbed animations, all based on physics and environmental stimuli. And they were like throwing stormtroopers at a rope bridge, and they would hold on for dear life.
Oh, yeah.
Then another stormtrooper would hold on to the other stormtrooper's leg, and it was all unscripted, but it looked so realistic. It was very, very exciting technology. Yeah.
They were doing that with Indy also, I think.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
It was developed before Indy.
Right.
But that's, we actually ran a story about the Indy, the tech demo, Indy's
Euphoria?
On the rope bridge.
Euphoria or something like that?
Yeah, that's, yeah. Is that what it's called, Euphoria?
Crysis is doing a little bit of that, I think. Like, it's sort of like not to that same extent, I don't believe, but, you know, like, if suddenly you're on a hill, and so your legs have to arch in a certain way, like, that's all done procedurally. It's not like they actually had to make a model in that position. Like, it actually just sort of knows how to deform that way, how a human form is and how it moves, how it bends realistically, so...
Yeah, I think it was that same video where they showed a guy walking on a flat slope, yep. and then a flat plane, and then they decided the flip of the switch, tilt the plane, you know, 3D is either way, and he just dynamically would walk naturally on it.
But long story short, yes, all those things would be in the Battlefield series.
Well, I think just to go into that a little bit more, all the Battlefield-specific stuff. I think the reason they haven't done the destructible terrain in there yet is because it's so many people in there, it's hard to synchronize it all up in multiplayer. Also, in terms of customization, it does tend to raise the barrier of entry if you have so many options like that, because some people just want to get in and play, and having just a class that you pick is enough for them. It becomes striking a balance between, you know, accessibility and customization. So if you can have it both ways, then great. But
is America's Army is more like what he'd be interested in? Do they have like a huge layout of different guns and things? It's been a long time since I played.
They do have different guns, but they don't have destructible environments.
I'm just thinking like options as far as like.
Oh, but if you're talking about like. I mean it's all real life weaponry.
Right.
And there is, well, there's no flying yet, so.
You know, probably you no Hueys. Actually,
yeah, you can't pilot Hueys. I don't think.
All right, so time for playlist. Chuck, what are you playing this week?
What am I playing this week? Wow. Let's see. On the PC, I've been playing... Let's see. I finished up Sam & Max 5. I'm sorry, not Sam & Max 5. That isn't out yet. Sam & Max 4. Abe Lincoln Must Die, which is a very good game. You'll see the full review for it in our May issue.
Did they break up the structure like you wanted?
Yes. Yes, they did. Excellent. Yes, they actually played around with the structure of the game, and they've, well, as I understand it, this is the first game that they've released where they've actually gotten feedback from the first couple of games, and so they've been able to implement that into this one. But yes, it did undergo a shake-up in structure, so it's not exactly like the first three games. And then...
adventure game?
No, of course it's an adventure game.
You know how much adventure games...
I do know how much you hate adventure games, and as per your orders, it's under 50%.
Keep your job another day.
And then also, weirdly, well, because when I travel, I play with my PSP and DS and everything, and so I've been playing this silly IDOS game called Chili Con Carnage, which is actually kind of fun, even if the title is a little slightly offensive.
To Chili?
Yeah, exactly.
So, DJ, I imagine you're playing a bit of Supreme Commander still?
I have been, but not nearly as much, because I got sucked into WoW.
Oh, God.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Like, truly,
yeah.
Truly sucked in. Great. Good to hear.
I hit level 30. Yeah, I'm a level 30 Blood Elf Paladin.
Good man.
I just tried to solo Black something deep. Black.
Rockspire?
Huh?
No, it wouldn't have been that.
No, it's the one in the Orc continent, or Orgrimmar, or near there. Black something deep, Black...
Black not getting Ladington.
Yeah. It's abbreviated BFD. I forget what it is.
So wait a second. What you're saying is basically this infection that has come over you is now preventing you from playing the game that you've been most excited about for the longest time. You're not. It's preventing you from playing Supreme Commander. This is worse than
it's not preventing. It's not preventing.
You just said you haven't. You haven't had time.
I said I haven't been playing as much.
Now let me get this straight, DJ. You slept in, and you're also addicted to WoW.
Yes.
Were you playing World of Warcraft?
Ask him if he's bathed today. I bet you the answer is no.
I have. Thank you. I have bathed.
Were you playing World of Warcraft last night?
Yes, I was.
I see.
Till what time?
Well, is that counting the changeover or not?
That was Sunday.
Wasn't the changeover on Saturday night?
Yes, the changeover on Saturday.
Yeah.
Saturday.
Okay. So there's a lot of dots in front of me right now, and I'm connecting the lines between them.
Yeah. Yes. Well, hey, do you guys want to come over to my apartment and check all my socks for poop? There's no poop in any of my socks. I'm not a poop socker.
Okay, so Kristen, what have you been playing?
On the PC, I'm going to start playing Guild Wars again. Which is hard to believe considering the fact that I just wrote a 14-page cover story on it.
Yes, seriously.
But after having a little break to write the story, yeah, I'm gonna go back and play some more Guild Wars.
Cool.
And then I'm going through a big like classic arcade games thing. I don't know what the deal is with that, but I love that stuff. So I'm playing a lot of like Tapper and Galaga.
Did those just come out on live?
Tapper came out fairly recently. Worms, I think, either just came out or is about to come out.
Unfortunately, it's Root Beer Tapper.
It is Root Beer Tapper.
Of course it is.
Original.
Is the Worms game multiplayer?
I don't know. I haven't actually checked it out yet.
Oh, if it's not, then it's just not worth having.
Husband is really interested to find out because that's like his favorite game ever. So.
Yeah. Oh, I remember playing that when my brother was in college, and that's like 12 years ago. You know, everyone in his dorm had Worms. It was fantastic. Yes, I made that joke. That was intense.
Yeah. I actually here's an odd recommendation coming from me, but I recently did a review for OXM, official Xbox magazine, of one of the live arcade games coming soon, called Catan, which is basically the board game, the extremely popular German board game Settlers of Catan, in digital format on live. I'm not sure when it's going to ship, but man, it's a great game. If you've got some friends who are willing to play it with you. If you're just playing with strangers, it's probably not going to be as fun.
Ooh.
But
if you've got some friends in general.
Yeah.
If you've got friends in general that are interested in playing digital board games with you. So, yeah, it's going to be a small market. But if you like board games like I like board games, you're going to love it. I've been playing, and actually I did that a while ago. This week I've actually been playing Shady McGrady's Rising Star.
I just got a copy of that.
You got a copy. Well, I wasn't able to play it for a while because there was a bug. It didn't work on 8800 cards, which is what I've got. And so I was just playing a little bit here in the office, And it's fantastic. I mean, it's not... I want to say it's the best thing ever because the description is the best thing ever. It allows you basically, you form a band, you can be metal or you can be country or you can be hip, hip hop, whatever. And you go out and you write songs, you practice in your room, you buy real equipment, and you can go out and buy Fender guitars and Marshall amplifiers and different amps and different guitar strings and stuff give you, different bonuses. You've got sort of an RPG thing where you get inspiration and stuff like that. Your bandmates can die, when you're out on tour, your bandmates can die. And if when you go back to that town, let's say you have a tour in that city, you've got a performance in that city, you can visit the cemetery there. And while you're at the cemetery visiting your fallen buddy, your happiness declines, but your inspiration increases.
Awesome.
Wow.
So you can write, so if you go back right after having visited your buddy at the tomb, you can go back and write an amazing song.
Okay, so I have to ask, what is it that's so dangerous that your bandmates are dying left and right? Are they overdosing?
Well, dude, when you're in a metal band, anything can happen. I mean, you've seen Spinal Tap.
You can start dating Courtney Love.
Yeah, it's kind of like Spinal Tap the game. Now, the downside is this thing was, this is a game, it's really fun, but it was a game made by, I think, one or two people. It's kind of like, it's primarily like a spreadsheet game. There is a little 3D element where you drive your tour van around, and there's little mini games. But it's not going to be for everybody. There's going to be a review in next month's issue of the magazine. Yeah, if you've ever been in a band, if you've ever wanted to be in a band, I do recommend it though. It's a hell of a lot of fun. You can check it out at Gilly Games, GILLIGAMES.com, and you can check it out there. It's a lot of fun.
And by not for everybody, he means not for me.
Yes,
that did sound like an awesome game until you said the word spreadsheet.
There is a spreadsheet. There is a spreadsheet element, but it's not going to be Quake. I mean, come on. You know, it's not in the Doom engine. It doesn't have to be. You could
import
your
Sims 1.
Well, the funny thing is that the gameplay sounded a lot like your regular life, Greg. I mean, you're talking about practicing in your room and buying guitar strings and everything. It's like I've been with you on guitar buying trips before.
That's true. And I actually just got a new guitar amp on Friday, which UPS screwed up.
You
I've
did finally get
it.
No good.
I got it and it came in powder form from UPS. The box was crushed.
No.
And so I played it a little bit over the weekend. It wasn't working properly, so I'm sending it back today to get a new one.
That stinks.
You need to go visit the grave of Hammy and your dead fish.
Seriously.
Go get inspired.
I'd get inspired, but I'd be sad. So it is a good time. Go to the website, check it out. Like I said, if you're into rocking, this is the game for you. I've got to say. But I think that's.
Can I talk about what I've been playing?
No.
Oh, yeah. Screw you, hippie. Just because you're the president of the United States.
Haven't you been playing with diapers?
I have. Yeah. Yes, I've been playing Dodge the Pee game. But I've been playing mostly. Mostly SSX Blur, which is the Wii SSX.
Oh, how is that?
It's got mixed reviews if you've checked it out, but I actually really like it. It's unlike any other Wii game in that it's hard to play. And
okay.
So it is sort of like the first advanced Wii game, and it has a learning curve. But once you get it, it's like, wow, I can't believe I'm doing this on a console. Because it's one of those things, like you go to the arcade and you play that motion capture game with like the punching game or the shooting game where you actually dodge. It's sort of like a new experience in that kind of same way. And I really recommend it.
Explain how the controls work. Chuck was trying to tell me earlier today. It didn't make any damn sense.
Well, yeah, it's okay. So you have it uses the nunchuck in your left hand and you can use the stick to do short turns, but you actually rotate the stick left and right twist it. In order to do hard cuts, and so you really sort of feel like you're snowboarding, and then to do
with your hand,
but it plays better if you're standing up, and so you kind of get into it. But you do tricks.
Can I stand on the Wiimote?
You do tricks basically by flipping the remotes in different directions and holding different buttons. The hardest thing about it are the Uber tricks, and to do those you have to draw shapes. And the unintuitive thing about it is you don't actually draw shapes on the screen like you did in Black and White to do spells. you actually move the remote through 3D space. And once you figure that out, they're a lot easier to pull off. But it's not very intuitive. You have to sort of get that down.
I'm actually really disappointed that game didn't come out for any other consoles. SSX 2 on original Xbox is one of my favorite games of all time.
I love
I still
the series.
Go back and play it.
Totally. Tricky and all those.
I didn't like Tricky so much.
I liked the Run DMC soundtrack.
Yeah, that one wasn't for me, but I do love the series. I can't wait for another one. Hopefully, I know it's a pipe dream, but come to the PC, damn it.
Well, maybe one day there will be Wii's in stores, and I can buy one.
Yeah.
And I can actually play the game.
We looked at Chuck. You've got a copy of that game, right? But then we went to the lunch today. We checked EB, Target, Sears, and like some like music store that you wouldn't think would carry video games, but they do, and none of them had Wii's. It's incredible.
Yeah. However, they all have stacks of PS3s. So if anyone needs a PS3, go to your local mall.
But you know what? They also didn't have stacks of Alienwares. So I think those things are selling out like crazy too.
Makes sense to me.
I'm forever indebted to Abra because when she was, I guess she would have been about 7 months pregnant, she was standing outside in front of Target at 8 a.m. mid-December Chicago for like a half hour in order to get me my Christmas present.
That's a good lady up there. That was
my
nice
Wii,
work.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's what it took.
That's very sweet. All right. Well, on that note, that's all the time we've got for this week. On behalf of Dan Stapleton.
From the fishbowl.
Oh.
Yes. Yes, Dan Stapleton from the fishbowl. Chuck Osborne. Kristen Salvatore. Jeremy Williams. I am Greg Viederman. Thanks for joining us this week. We will be back on Thursday for another podcast to make up for the fact that we were unable to do one last week. Remember to send questions, both written and audio, to us at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you'd like to subscribe to the mag, you know, we've got that thing that you can actually hold in your hands and read in the bathroom, go over to www.pcgamer.com/subscribe. Thanks much. Talk to you soon. Can you maybe move the mic closer to your mouth?
Maybe put the mic in your mouth.
Yeah, exactly.
How's this?
A little too close.
It sounds like you're filleting the mic.
How about now?
That's better.
I have the help of Superman today. So
yes. Chuck bought a new Superman doll.
Wow.
I thought he was talking about his underwear.
Let me check. No, not today.
I'm still kind of sleepy.
Yeah.
I heard you overslept.
I did.
Yeah.
Long enough to miss the shuttle and not be able to come in to work.
By the way, Kristen, I almost bought you panties at the mall today.
I hate that word.
Panties. Undergarments.
I hate that word so much.
I was gonna go buy, so my idea was to go buy the largest pair of crotch panties I could find.
Hey, Jeremy, can you make sure you leave that part in?
Oh, yeah. My God.
Yeah. I assume you're playing. What do I sound like? You want to drop me, call me real back real quick?
What are those little Skype sounds?
It's a key sound, yeah.
What's weird is I don't hear them. That's the weirdest thing.
Oh.
Only you hear them.
You're missing out, Jeremy.
Yeah, they're really cool. Puts me in the mind of jazz.
Sam.
That funny.
Thank you, James Lipton. From the fishbowl. From the fishbowl. From the fishbowl.
Chuck Osborne, Kristen Salvatore, Jeremy Williams. I'm Greg Viederman. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
We'll see you as Thursday.
Always, oh, right. We'll see you one more time. Damn it.
That puts me in the mind for jazz.
Yeah. Are you ready for another From the Fishbowl, Dan?
No.